Kliniak, editorial director of Promax BDA, and this is the Daily Brief podcast. You can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you are enjoying listening to us, please head over to Apple Podcasts, give us all the stars. That helps other people find us. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Carson Hood, who is executive producer, and Josh Norton, who is founder and executive creative director of creative agency Big Star. They are based in New York City. Hi, guys. Welcome to the podcast.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Hi, Paige.
So, Josh, to kick it off, how did Big Star get its name?
Back in 2004, there was this huge movement in American graphic design where a lot of people were looking at Soviet constructivism as just the cool thing of the moment. And I have to admit, I got really caught up in that. So the way that the colors and the design architecture and the line work and the way they treated portraits in that Soviet constructivism movement really grabbed my attention. And so if you look back at our initial brand, it was really based off of that. And the idea of Big Star was this sense of this kind of greater good that the Soviets were kind of selling their people and the world at the time. So the name kind of made sense with the aesthetic. And what happened is years later, this look kind of went away. We matured as designers and as a company, but the name stuck. So that's how Big Star was named. It was around an aesthetic movement that I really loved at the time. We built it up and then we took the look away, but we kept the name.
So now that's going to immediately throw me off my plan script, because it's interesting since you guys did work for the Americans, and a lot of, I don't know about this year, but over the past couple of years, a lot of their look has been based on Soviet constructionism, which makes total sense because of the period. And you guys did some work for the Americans. So that's just sort of an interesting full circle thing. And that promo, okay, I was going to talk about this at the end, but we'll talk about it now. That promo, sure. And I'll post it with this, is, I think it's really cool with the flag, but you just want to talk about it a little and how, what it meant to you to do that work since you were into that look.
Yeah, sure. I mean, as you said, The Americans is just an awesome series by FX, and they're in their last season. And, you know, we've had a relationship with FX for quite some years, and they called us up and asked us if we wanted to pitch some tease ideas to them, again, for the final season. And the answer is, of course, when do we begin? So we started to throw a bunch of ideas to them and their creatives. And what was really great is we generated, I think we walked into that pitch with almost like 10 ideas. And we got a positive reaction from many of them. And it was really a testament to them being able to take a look at simple writing and reference and some kind of rough ideas of how we would do things, and then begin to cherry pick with us the best and leading ideas. And this concept of the flag just kind of survived all of the many rounds that all of the pitches went through. And we ended up taking a very interesting approach where we did practical. There was a practical flag that was shot. We shot a lot of practical live action elements with Susie C, one of my favorite elemental directors out of Berlin. And then we did CG flag renders here in New York. And we kind of put it all together into the tease as it is now. And as far as meaning is concerned, I think that The Americans is so relevant to what's going on politically today with Trump and Putin and Russia and the U.S. and everybody else in the global political community. So it was a pleasure to work on, both on a technical level and also on a narrative level. What a great story and how timely.
I think also, and again, that you guys can see that trailer on Brief, but what that trailer is a good example of, and we'll again talk more about this as we go through your work, but I feel like what Big Star does really well is take a concept and put it into action without necessarily actors or script. Like, you're really good at saying, let's just take a concept and play this all the way through, and it's all created wholesale by you.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, thanks for saying that, because I do consider that one of our greatest strengths is, you know, clients and collaborators and directors, you know, whomever we end up in business with comes to us. And a lot of times they can't provide the elements to tell their story or express a specific piece of narrative arithmetic that they need done. And it's up to us at Big Star to really create something out of nothing. And we have a lot of resources in order to do so. And we love that challenge.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
Go ahead, Carson.
I was just going to say that is definitely the call we get a lot of times from clients. Like, I don't have footage or I don't really have a brief together. And I'm like, well, then you've called us at the right time. You've called the right people.
Why do you think that's something that you guys are specifically good at?
Well,
we probably have different answers to this.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar, Carson, because my answer is kind of personal. And, you know, I have a fine arts background and a background in illustration and graphic design and animation and filmmaking and many different things. So I really like to approach problem solving as a creative from a lot of different production angles. I don't like to think through my tools. I like to come up with original ideas and then figure out a way to make it happen. I think that's a mantra that really we all share at the office, where we really don't try to think of things through software or through specific capabilities. We like to think about the story and a big visual hook first. And also, working a lot in independent films in the beginning of my career was challenging as far as what types of materials you would be able to get. So many times we would get calls for, early on in Big Star, we would get calls to do FX or graphic design, storytelling, when there were no materials at all. So I think we got really used to that. And then we got used to the idea, well, we can create our own materials from nothing, and that's become something that we continue to enjoy to do and take to higher levels.
What's your answer, Carson?
You know, we're actually not too different. I was just going to say, I think Josh as a creative has a unique ability to see things from the client's perspective. And I've worked with a lot of creatives in my time, and not always is it easy to see the other side of the coin and really the objective for what their goals are. You know, and sometimes a client has goals that it can't be aligned with creative capabilities. And so I think we have a unique ability, and Josh leads the team in a way that is able to see through the problems and communicate that, you know, in a great way.
Yeah, I mean, I just don't think when I look at the different agencies that we've covered over the years, I can't think of another agency that does conceptual stuff in the way that you guys do. So that actually takes us pretty nicely into one of the campaigns you just recently did, which is Krypton.
The story of my family is one of triumph and sacrifice. How we led a revolution against tyranny. Now it falls on my shoulders to save my world.
Someone from the future is coming to destroy Krypton. Because where I'm from, your grandson becomes the greatest hero of the universe.
Family isn't about how we died. It's about how we lived.
So Krypton is a new show on Sci-Fi. It's produced by Warner Brothers. It tells the story of Superman's grandfather and his life on Krypton before it was destroyed. You guys did a teaser promo for that campaign. And again, you guys can come see it on Brief. But can you just sort of talk me through what you ended up doing for that teaser and why you took that approach and how did you sell it to Sci-Fi?
Sure thing. And starting with the brief, it was one of those briefs that were pretty open. You know, here's our show. Here are some of the elements of the series. Here's our cast of characters, et cetera. And, you know, we need to get the word out and we don't have any material. So what ideas do you guys have? That was essentially the brief. And again, like Carson said, we love those briefs. So what we tried to do first is really distill the story down to some visual mnemonics, some recognizable visual moments that are very near and dear to the creator's heart, the creators of the series. And usually we're able to have a conversation with, you know, the marketing team or whomever's on the side of the network that we're collaborating with to really get down to, like, what are those really important details? What are those big story visuals that we can tap into? And in this case, there was a the T starts with a drop of blood, and that blood is the blood of Segal, which is Superman's grandfather, as he takes an ancient oath to his family. It's a huge, you know, moment in episode 101, and we wanted to make something more of that. And then the idea of Krypton as a planet itself, floating in who knows where outer space. There's just like such a, you know, an epic scale to that visually that we wanted to tap into. And then there's the, of course, the sigil of Hausel, which is the Superman S shield. So we wanted to take those three elements and create a story. So we had the blood drop into this kind of plant through planetary, sorry, through outer space into this kind of like planet, and have it explode with power and fire and form into the sigil, and then ultimately bring on the Krypton logo. So, you know, I think that's a pretty good example of us trying to, again, distill and drill down to those most basic, most powerful visual elements, and then put them together into a story that really delivers a dramatic visual punch and stays in line narratively and engages viewers. So you get this kind of thing, you get to watch this thing that you wouldn't really expect. And yeah, it's exciting to watch, and it's exciting to make as well.
And when did that teaser first come out?
I don't know, Carson, when did you watch that?
That was early March.
Okay, so not that long before the show premiered. Okay.
Right, show premiered on the 21st, and I believe it came out probably very beginning of March, so like 3 weeks before.
And then this is just like a technical, not even technical, but I was thinking about the Superman logo and it being the sigil of House L. So in the lore, which I'm not super knowledgeable about the lore of Superman, mm-hmm. but because I was thinking, you know, Krypton, they're sort of trying to maybe get away from the story of Superman because it's more about the, you know, the pre-story. But because mm-hmm. that sigil is the same, it's all sort of one thing. I just wondered if they were like, well, we don't really know if we want to get into the Superman thing since it's really a story about before Superman.
Yes, definitely. There were, you know, there's different ways to express Superman. You know, there's the likeness of him as a hero. There's the cape. There's the
right.
S. There's
right.
the colors. You know, all of these other things. They felt like I'll call it a geological rendering of the sigil on a planet form made sense to them, because it kind of took everything off of what we know as like, this is Earth and this is the Superman we know, and it put it into a totally different context. In this case, a totally different planet that's kind of exploding, which is really what Krypton ends up doing, is
right.
imploding and then exploding. And so we were able to kind of change the context of the S shield, mm-hmm. but still kind of keep that equity. And I think that, you know, when we approach projects like this, we don't want to shy away from, you know, such a powerful symbol like that. We want to be able to use it, but we want to use it in a new and a fresh way, especially for a series like this.
Yeah, I would add that, like, getting briefs like these and some of the others that we've spoke about, as far as, you know, maybe being limited and the resources we have, we're walking a fine line a lot of the times, and kind of threading the needle of what they want to say without necessarily saying it, or, you know, being related to things without showing them, you know, there's a very fine line to walk there.
That it's interesting too, because later in the campaign you do see a little bit of the cape.
Yeah.
But it's mm-hmm. but it's not very, it's pretty subtle. But let's talk about that then. So you guys did this teaser, and then initially did you think you were gonna expand the campaign, or did that come later?
I mean, it's always a hope.
Yeah, there's a hope, I was just going to say, yeah, there's a hope for sure. There was maybe a little conversations, but I don't even know that they knew that they were going to expand it. I think the teaser everybody, us included, network included, everybody, we all really liked the teaser, and internally it really snowballed on their end. And then, you know, a lot of credit to the show, got some good reviews and a lot of good press. And then next thing we know, I was down here at South By and it was everywhere, like these spots. And it just really, I felt like the campaign as a whole just exploded everywhere across the nation.
So then what happened? Because you then did those character portraits, or what happened in terms of you guys expanding the campaign?
Well, they came to us then for some specifics. They said that they had shot the characters and that on green, and they wanted some place to put them. They're like, we really weren't sure. We've got this great footage, and they shared the footage with us and said, we're not sure where we want to put them, and we want to have a design sensibility that kind of plays off of the teaser. So, you know, we sent a lot of different frames, a lot of different looks, and there was quite a bit of back and forth to land on this sigil background that's actually much lighter than anything you saw during the teaser. It's almost like day versus night, and it's this kind of clean, very textured look. And then we had another set of promos they asked us to work on, which is basically the quote spots. That's where we started to integrate typography into show footage. And this was an exercise in choosing great shots, applying a really specific color correct that can kind of carry through the whole spot, and then also rotoscoping and comping typography. We also toolkitted that for them as well. So we gave them some really complex, very involved comps, as well as some simple ones that they could use themselves. And I think they made great use of it throughout their campaign.
And where all did those spots air? Were they just the character spots? Were they just on TV, or did they end up putting them out on social media and other platforms?
Definitely on TV, and I have seen some on social as well, on their like Instagram and Facebook and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so then I'm going to kind of go from there, because in watching these spots, there was sort of a natural evolution to me. So then you guys did the launch promo one of the launch promos. I've seen a lot of promos for Fear of the Walking Dead, which just opened fourth season. So the spot that you guys show, it uses the strobe effect. The design is really cool on it. I feel like it's sort of conceptually related to the Krypton spot is because of how much design is in it. Because a lot of times, right, with these spots, they're very editorial or footage based, but this one there's just a lot conceptually to it. So can you just talk about what AMC asked for and how that whole spot evolved?
Sure thing. So this is a great brief from AMC. Basically, they let us know, you know, Fear is launching into a new season, and Morgan, one of the main characters from Walking Dead, is going to cross over into Fear.
Right.
And how do we let people know that? How do we make a big splash while staying very much in the right pocket tonally? They did let us know that they planned on shooting all of the characters on set. They would have a few minutes with them, which is very typical. So we came up with a few different ideas. I think we pitched them five different concepts. These days we really do like to cover the gambit when we pitch, cover rather a large spectrum when we pitch. So I think there were ideas that were just about Morgan, and then there was the strobe concept, which really was a visual device and language that could allow us to get from one character to the next really quickly and use typography. Then we did some motion control stuff, and then we pitched them another idea that had nothing to do with characters at all. But they really gravitated towards this idea of creating this percussive kind of flutter cut editorial that would kind of rip through the characters as they emote to camera, and they have props, guns and knives and other very meaningful objects with them, and then intercut that with some really active, very bold typography. And, once we pitched them that concept, they gravitated right toward it. And very quickly we got into production. And for us with AMC, typically we really design boards out pretty specifically up front in the pitch. So once they gave us a thumbs up on the pitch, we were able to go right into production, which many of times is necessary. I think their pitch was like the next week. So they give us a questionnaire and are like, hey, what do you want the characters to do? And we have a bit of a back and forth. And then a week later, we have footage. So we cut it together here, which for a spot like this is quite a process. You know, you want to really create this tension from moment to moment. And it's not just adding black frames. This is skipping through time. And as you do so, you're kind of almost animating as you edit when you go from moment to moment. So we love that kind of work where we can really dig in and make, you know, hundreds of cuts in a 60-second spot to really construct something unique and, again, kind of percussive that really kind of grabs the viewer, has great production value. And then we were able to layer in some stuff from the show as well. If you look closely, there's, like, landscape elements from the show, all of which is really, you know, meaningful. And maybe we shouldn't completely expect this, but we like to tell ourselves that the fans will pull our teasers apart when we create them, so everything has to be really meaningful. So the deeper they look, the greater the story is. So, you know, every moment in that, every element in any spot that we do certainly has meaning. And in this case, we were able to add a lot of those elements, a lot of those Easter eggs, and come up with a spot that really drives and I think speaks to viewers on a pretty deep level. We loved, everything about the project was really a pleasure. And I'm really happy with the way it came out in the end.
Yeah, it's a really cool spot. And is that the only part of that campaign you did for Fear the Walking Dead, or was there more to it?
I think that was it. We did cut downs, and I think they're continuing to cut things down. They have taken parts of the graphics, I believe, and used them in other spots, which is great because I love the type and the end page and stuff. So I believe they've kind of co-opted that here and there in other parts of their campaign, but that was really the mission, was to create a 60 and a 30 that was very much character focused and began and ended with Morgan.
And then what other kinds of stuff have you done for AMC?
Ooh, let me see. We did a launch tease for Badlands. We actually did two of them. And we've had great conversations about other projects, but I can't come. We did Chris Hardwick, we did the show open for Chris Hardwick, which ended up on AMC, which was an AMC project.
Yeah, Talking.
Yeah. Carson, anything else that comes to mind?
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Our plan is to do much, much more because we love those guys.
Yeah, exactly.
We just started, I guess we can't, can we?
Yeah, I know that's kind of the line I'm walking right now, too.
That's fine. We can talk about that another time.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, stay tuned.
Let us follow up with you.
We just started something great with them.
Okay. All right. So just kind of circling back to one of my questions. So again, when people go through and look at these different spots, I think, again, a through line is that at least the work I've seen of Big Star, I think every piece I've seen has a big design element to it. Do you feel like that's really more where you guys lean? Like you don't, if people are going to do just like a strict editorial or footage based spot, do you think they just go to another agency?
Look, I will never tell you go to another agency. We're not in the business of no. And if anybody knows anything about boutique motion graphics companies, we are a feisty, aggressive bunch that likes to bite off more than we can chew. However, when people ask us about like clip driven spots and so on, we say yes. Like if we have a great relationship and they trust us and know that we make our deadlines and they love our creative and they like to have conversations with us, which is really what all this collaboration is about, then yeah, we take that stuff on. But it's not the typical call we get. We typically are called to do more graphically intensive, more 3D intensive, more effects intensive projects.
Right.
Yeah, I think
I have this conversation quite a bit, and I tell clients all the time that straight editorial projects wouldn't be the foot I would lead with, but certainly a capability we have in-house. I mean, we just spoke about Fear. We handled all the editing on that particular project, and, you know, Game of Thrones that we spoke about earlier was a shared effort between us and HBO. So certainly a capability we have, but maybe not the foot we'd lead with. Definitely the design is something we would – you would come to us first for the design, right, and then say, you know, take that into your edit and cut it up as well.
Right.
And I guess it's an ego thing, but we like to do things that other people cannot, you know?
Right.
We like to combine these big disciplines of graphic design, animation, live action, and 3D. It's our best day when we get to put those things together and create something unique.
Yeah. So that sort of brings me back around to, you guys have just done, I don't know if a rebrand is the correct term, but you relaunched your website. I feel like you have the motto, telling the bigger story, which is new to me. It might not be new to you. But right now, how would you describe the way that you're positioning Big Star?
Well, you know, telling the bigger story is definitely, you know, a mantra, a motto for us. You know, it's a reminder that with all the tools and talent that we have, it's all for naught if it doesn't elevate the stories that we help to tell and sell. You know, telling the bigger story reminds us of that. And it also lets our clients know where our priorities are, that we're team players, that we really are dedicated to their stories and want to bring the most narrative value to our work as possible. So when we say telling the bigger story, really that's what we mean.
And then you also just go ahead, Carson.
No, I think he nailed it. I agree with all that. It's all about our clients and our support system for them. And, you know, walking that line that we spoke about earlier, or even on, you know, the doc films that we work with, there's, in a documentary film, there's so much to tell in these stories. You know, there's more than just the two storylines. There's so many levels and layers to it that oftentimes that's our heavy lifting. That's our job through the graphics and through the branding, is to walk the viewer through the story and help tell the story that maybe you don't see in the footage or the archival footage or whatever the case may be, but through the graphics and how they're on the screen and showing data or whatever the case may be.
So when, sort of along the lines of telling the bigger story, but in the time that you guys have existed as an agency and looking at how incredibly much TV has changed in that time, how would you say your relationship with your clients has changed? And in terms of what they ask you to do, what kind of strategy they ask you to put behind it, what kind of platforms they ask you to produce for?
I think Carson and I are going to have different answers to this, and I'd love to hear. I'd love to hear your answer first, Carson. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, I would say right now in our industry, I think there's probably not a better time for a company like Big Star. The calls we're getting now, that there's just such a massive amount of content out there, and for so many platforms. And so it's so important right now for us to help our clients stand out and to raise the bar in what is quality. And so I think that's the call that a lot of times our clients are giving to us, whether it be a network that's saying, hey, I need this to stand out. This has to really draw viewers' attention. And then not only does it need to work in a linear form, but we've got to break this up, and it's got to get, it has a 6-second attention span on Instagram or whatever the case may be. And so that's really the brief we're getting, is how do we stand up? How do we elevate the story that's trying to be told here? And communicate that to a viewer in a quick but sophisticated way that says this is quality and deserves your attention and your time.
I'll come at it from a different angle, probably a more personal angle. I started Big Star in 2004, and I was a child. You know, I had no idea what I was doing. It was a time where desktop shops were like a really new thing. And I was really fortunate to be in a place, in a city, in a culture that supported that idea. And I had like great people, both creative mentors around me and people who were willing to take a risk on hiring out a very young desktop shop, which Big Star was. And now it's almost 15 years later. And we're just a lot more informed. We're a lot more sophisticated in the way that we can address the challenges that companies like ours come across every day, both creatively and logistically and business-wise. And so I think now people and clients and clients understand that. They see that Big Star is a real company. We know what we're doing, and we are going to take a lot of responsibility in the creative endeavors that we join them on. And, I think that makes a huge difference with the way that you're treated. We have great relationships with big clients, and we very much appreciate it because we know how it is to be in a position where you don't have those great relationships and really how hard that can be. And we put a lot of effort towards maintaining those relationships, both on a creative and on a business level. And I think, our clients really do appreciate that. And so, it's a world of difference in 15 years. It's only been Big Star for me, so it's really hard for me to say how everything else is going in the industry. But I have to think when you create timeless work, which is what we really try to do. We try to create work that we can look at in 10 years and be proud of. We can look at it in 15 years and be proud of 20. Who knows what's going to be going on in 20 years? But good design, well-directed live action, physically lifelike 3D rendering, none of that stuff is ever really going to go out of style. You can chop it up and you can change the duration and you can change the size of the screen. But I think that those tenets and those foundations of good visual storytelling will always be there, and that's what I like to focus on.
I would add to – I was just going to say that I think you asked, like, how the calls may be different these days from these clients. And I think that there's maybe more expectation these days. Being that we do have a reputation, and as Josh said, like, building the company comes with – tried and true partnerships and clients that we're all, happy to have. But with that and with the level of content that's out there and the vast growth and competition for networks and streaming service and so forth comes expectation. And so, when they call, they need it to be good and they need it to be right. And they need those things the first time around. The schedules are shorter and the expectations are higher.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing that seems, I was just listening to something today where they reminded us that the Chinese word for crisis and opportunity is the same or something. But I think the thing that's interesting, and I think the thing that is challenging for agencies is what clients are demanding is so much more strategic and so much more, holistic might not be the right word, but really like A to Z. So it's like, what is the strategy behind this campaign? It's not just like, here's a spot. Here's a whole concept. Here's how it plays on each platform. Here's how it engages the brand and promotes the show. I mean, you just have to do a lot more with it than just design something.
You have to be educated.
Absolutely.
I mean, they definitely expect us to be educated on where this is going to be viewed and how and who we're trying to capture with it, I think. Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah, they don't want your dream if your dream can't be modulated down to all the different platforms. They want it both, right? They want your dream that can not. And as Carson put it, you have to be informed. And I think we've done a great job here of prioritizing two things in our process when we start to work with clients. Number one, be aware of all the different platforms that they're on and what they're aspiring to do in these different platforms, as aware as you can be,
Right.
And then do your research. you know, on the show. Do your research on the story. You know, if you're working on something that has, you know, that's based on a book, do yourself a favor, read the book or read part of the book. Really get into it. Really do the research. Understand what you're talking about when you're talking about their series. And even if it doesn't go your way creatively, people really respect the effort and certainly will hear you out when you know about their stories and what they're aspiring to do with them.
So two questions around that. One, does that mean you had to read all of the Game of Thrones books and all of the Walking Dead graphics novels? And two, do the networks provide you with some research to help you out?
Typically you don't, you know, you'll get a brief that kind of breaks down their, you know, aspirations for that specific moment in the life of the series, you know, but they're not going to tell you what the entire series is about. You're definitely expected to do a little binge watching. And you know, that can be great, or sometimes if it's not a show that you love, not so great. You know, for the most part, you have to watch the series. You have to be prepared, know what's going on with the storyline. Know what's going on with all the main characters, what makes them tick, you know, because this is stuff that's really fundamental to understanding enough to pitch. And then you have the books. So Game of Thrones, I would say that, yes, I was I read the first book before I had my first meeting with HBO. Once I figured out what the project was about, I read the book. And then we got together, and that was season one. And I would say that was the only book that I was felt like I needed to read. The rest I kind of wanted to read because I got into it, which was great. And, you know, you can't do it all yourself. Fortunately, I have an awesome staff here that loves graphic novels, that loves television and series work, both in the fiction and nonfiction space. So I'm excited to say that they're into it, and they do a lot of research as well as designers and producers. That really helps with our process.
Paige, I have a feeling you've read all the Game of Thrones books.
Yes, twice.
You know what? I could do it twice. I'll be honest.
They were better the second time, actually, I have to say, because the first time I got really confused. The second time I could follow everything.
Well, then there's like that stuff that happens, I think it's in the third or fourth book, where it just kind of meanders and goes into these places.
So much meandering.
Yeah, begat, enough begatting. Let's get back to John and
100%.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now we're going to digress for 1 second, and then we're going to come right back on track. But what, when you lay your bets, do you think George R.R. is going to finish or no?
I think he's done already, is the rumor.
Oh, really? Oh, please let that
be. Yeah, he's done. The cliff notes are done. He's just kind of like filling it out. I think like if he passes away, some letter gets sent to Moldova or some other, you know, ancient place. And then and then the rest of the book is then forwarded on to his grandson or whomever. There is a copy of the, and it is known how this story ends. That is my understanding. Please don't quote me. Just put me on the podcast. And, you know,
But okay.
I think he finishes, but has a lot of help.
Okay. I mean, that's fine. Just please. I feel like however the TV show is going to end will not be the, I mean, it might be along the lines of the real end, but how he gets there will definitely not be the same because the TV show is nowhere close to covering everything. I mean, it's like a skim off the top. So I really am like, you've got to finish. I invested all this time.
You've
invested a lot of that.
Me and many other people have read them like 10 times or something. People are insane. All right, I digress. So coming up for you guys is some work that you're doing. My understanding is for Amazon and for Netflix. I know that sometimes you can't talk about projects that are in the future, but is there anything you can tease out about those projects?
I think we can say for Amazon, Man in the High Castle, we can say that that's the property as far as what we're doing. We'll be sure and follow up with you on that.
Have you done Man in the High Castle before? They've had a lot.
No, this is our first time.
Okay.
Yeah, it's our first time. It's been a lot of fun. And then, yeah, we'll be sure and follow up with you on that one. And then Netflix, I think all we could probably say on that is we have actually a couple of different projects in-house for series in-house for them right now, but it's probably about where we can start in that conversation.
Right. So, and then it might be part of the conversation we just had, but how are you seeing that the arrival of these services, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, is changing your business, if at all?
Josh, you wanted to, I could talk about talking for hours on something. I could go on forever.
I mean, I just see it as a great opportunity. I really do. You know, with motion graphics and specialized production playing a larger role in, you know, especially nonfiction storytelling, something that is very much part of what Big Star does day in and day out. It's a huge opportunity. It's a huge platform. I think that the audience taste level and desire to see great graphic design elements in their programming, as well as great visual moments of production that elevate the entire story, is becoming just more and more and deeper. That connection is deepening. So companies like ours are just in a really great place to work on those projects at a volume that's never really been seen before. So we're excited about it. We're well positioned because we've worked with some of the greatest documentary filmmakers in history, and we're just kind of continuing to do what we do to tell the bigger story, and that really does extend very much into content projects that we would work on with Netflix, with Amazon, et cetera, as well as marketing projects.
Well, and
we just see it as a great opportunity.
I mean, I think you just saw, I think I just read in The Drum or something, but that Netflix said as part of, they had that big quarterly earnings report that sent their stock to, I think, an all-time high, but that they're going to up their marketing spend. And I think initially, when Netflix moved into streaming, they always did a lot of marketing, but I think, you know, the competition is so much and they have so many shows, they've really realized how much they need to spend on marketing, which can only be good for the industry.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, Carson,
and I
you
think
don't
directors
have
are also changing too. Sorry, I was going to just say, I think that directors are changing too, as far as how much they want to embrace expressive graphic design. You know, you look at something like Wormwood by Errol Morris, and the way he used graphic design and new filmmaking techniques that are really visually unique and push the envelope further. The more things like that happen, and iconic directors like that continue to lead the charge in that way, the more we're getting calls for those kind of that kind of out of the box thinking when it comes to storytelling. So I think it's just extremely exciting time, both on a volume level, but also on a quality level and the amount of expression people are looking for in their films and in their content. But sorry, Carson, go ahead. You were going to say something.
No, yeah, you touched on a lot of the points I was going to say. I think from, the biggest standpoint is volume. There's so much content being created out there, and with content comes marketing initiatives. And I think, you know, the streaming services and network side of this is that with that comes competition. And I think we've seen an uptick in how design and graphics is perceived, and those that truly value it and those who maybe don't as much, which is fine, but they're seeing that they need the level of branding that comes along with having a hit series or a hit program, both the through line between that, having a series into the marketing side of things. You know, from a Big Star standpoint, we're uniquely position there because we have such a rich history with documentary filmmaking and doc series, and then into the marketing side, that's just the sheer volume and expertise of being able to take a show and build out the branding and series graphics and immediately lend that and start taking on the marketing side and using our toolkits to build out a cohesive campaign through promos and teaser packages and so forth. it's just incredible. And now with the streaming services, that's been pushed even further into building out of home elements, whether it be film art, like the movie poster, or mm-hmm. even the digital elements to banner ads and you know, all those annoying clicking ads that will follow you around. So it's large.
Well, the other thing that, I don't know how much Big Star gets into this, but I was also down at South By for the second weekend. And I mean, you see this all over the place. You see it at Comic-Con and WonderCon, but you see a lot of that experiential. Do you guys get involved with much of that in terms of creating assets or anything?
Assets for sure. You know, we've done several, I would say, event graphic packages. Mm-hmm. We actually recently, last year, at the end of the year, I guess it was, timing might be off here, but anyways, the NBC Meet the Press Film Festival is one that we worked with them. It was the first annual. They'd never done it before, and we helped them brand that event as well as all the graphics that went along with it. We did the One Club Creative Awards for many years. Josh, how many times? How many, like 6 years in a row or something like that?
I think they skipped 1 year with us.
Yeah,
6 years.
Like 5 years. And so, yes, definitely the event graphics side of things. But maybe we don't necessarily do the production side
right.
of the experience.
Right.
I love the idea of doing experiential work. It's something that, you know, maybe it's just a phase that we haven't hit yet as a company. Again, you know, we've got these great tools. We just continue to search for new ways to apply them. And new ways to kind of generate creative platforms and just make, you know, audiences say wow. So experiential work, I think, is super interesting, and we'd love to do more of it.
All right. I think that's probably all the time that we've got. Do you guys have anything else you want to add, or do you feel like we covered it pretty much?
I feel like we covered a lot.
We covered a lot.
Yeah.
So, and you guys,
I do as well. I want to thank you, and I want to thank Promax for the support over the years
yeah.
for companies like ours and giving us all some place to not only meet every year, but like to, you know, take special pride in our contribution to the industry and to media at large. So I really want to give a big thank you to Promax for not only, you know, featuring us today, but the work that you guys have done over the years. It's been a really big deal for us.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Paige. Thanks, Steve. Thank Promax, and appreciate it.
Promax says thank you, and also thank you for the opportunity for this promo, which is that the Promax BDA conference is being held June 11th through 14th in New York. So sign up now. All right, Josh and Carson, thank you so much for your time, and we will talk again soon.
Thanks, Paige.
Great.
Thank you.
Paige.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Paige Albiniak is editorial director of Promax BDA. LaFern Cusack is executive producer of the Daily Brief podcast and senior producer at Promax BDA. Video helper provides the music. Digital producer Kate LaKyer-Marion and social media coordinator Kristen Craik contribute to Daily Brief. Follow Paige on Twitter at Paige A. Follow LaFern at LaFern Cusack and follow Promax BDA at Promax BDA. You can reach out to us at dailybrief@promaxbda.org. And you can subscribe to the Daily Brief podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Podomatic, and now on Spotify. Thanks for listening.